Well, this is the place where you probably expect me to say something like, turn with me if you will. But I'm not. Because what I'm going to do instead is introduce this piece just a little bit differently than I often do. Well, most of the time I do. Yeah, it does start at chapter 10 of the book of Shemot, or Exodus. We'll get there in a minute. But sometimes, not as often as I used to, but every now and then, based on what's going on in the Torah portion and in the world, I will swap around and I'll do the news first. And I'm not quite going to do that tonight, but I'm going to do one single story from the news, and maybe once we get to the Torah portion, you'll see why that's the case. But this came actually from a Russian source, so at least it's probably no less reliable than the New York Times or the WAPO. And it says the following in the headline, "The 10 Plagues of Mecca. Horrid locust swarms invade the holiest city in Islam. They have launched an operation there in the Islamic capital to eradicate the insects." Here's the story and the headline part that I thought was kind of funny. Now, this is coming again from a Russian source. It says, "Whether this calamity was a divine message or the result of migration remains a mystery." Now, when I read the word migration, I'm thinking, hey, there's a double entendre for you, isn't it? But the massive swarm of locusts might still be unsettling to some. And the story says, "The Grand Mosque in Mecca, the most sacred site in all of Islam, has faced an insect invasion this week. Multiple videos online shared by people from the largest mosque in the world show hordes of locusts descending on the site, prompting Mecca's municipal authorities to deploy cleanup teams." Lots and lots of stuff about dead insects all over the place. And, quote, an official said, "We've harnessed all efforts available to speed up the eradication of the insects to provide safety and comfort of guests to God's house." Of course, the question is, which God, right? Certainly not the one that wrote the scriptures. No commentary has yet been available, it says, as far as the reasons for the plague. Now, here is why I thought that was particularly interesting, because this is the week where literally chapter 10 begins with the eighth plague, Parshabo, and what is it? It's the plague of locusts. Now, isn't that an amazing coincidence? Locusts invade so-called God's house. One of the things that I have mentioned, and I can't help but think probably bears repeating, is if you look at the plagues, you'll see that universally they have a form of essentially the real God of the universe holding up the various fake gods, and then saying things like, "You think this is a god? Let me show you a real god." Of course, the bottom line in the Hebrew is Ani Yahuwah. I am Yod He Vav He, not to be confused with Allah or Ra, the sun god, or any of a number of other gods. Which I guess I will summarize my intro to the portion this way by saying, just goes to show you, Allah has no sense of humor, but Yahuwah certainly seems to. Now, is this a plague? You know, It is. Never ceases to amaze me, folks, even in the little things, how sometimes stuff we see in the news just so closely mirrors the Torah portion. But this is probably a bit more so than normal, and we're getting used to it, right? So it's still almost a bit surprising. All right, let's talk about the Torah portion, because there's going to be some other aspects of this that I think are also really worthy of note. Starting with the place where it begins, and Yahuwah said unto Moshe. All right, well, we know that phrase gets repeated a lot. Ve'amar Yahuwah al Moshe. Okay, well, what's the first word then that's unique? Bo al Pharaoh. Either go in or come in unto Pharaoh. So the Torah portion is called Bo. Go. For I have hardened his heart. Oh, time out. Okay, we talked about this before. Up until this point, we've seen that for the most part, it's Pharaoh that hardens his own heart. That English word is a kind of a conflation. There's actually two words in the Hebrew, right? One is to kazak, to strengthen. That's the same root word as be strong and of good courage. I usually twist the Hebrew a little bit and say, okay, the word in English could kind of be translated, transliterated and and transmogrified as Kazakhify. Strengthen his heart. Pharaoh strengthens his own heart. But also, sometimes, Pharaoh stubbornizes his own heart, and eventually you get to the point where he's made his bed, he's going to have to lie in it. It looks like we're there. So, says Yahuwah, not only have I hardened his heart, but the heart of his servants too, so that I might show my signs. My signs. O-T. Actually, I think the plural would be pronounced O-T-T. But that word there, O-T, is a sign. The Hebrew scholars will point out that there are often discussions in the Scripture about signs and wonders. And no doubt the word translated as wonder in English is in fact a miracle. But sign, they will remind us, is something else. Sign is literally kind of a coded message to those with eyes to see. Sometimes even those that don't have eyes to see will eventually get it. And that seems to apply to Pharaoh and his servants. So he is now saying to Moshe, go unto Pharaoh. I have kazakhified his heart. No, actually this is stubbornized his heart in this case. That word there, kabad. I have made hard, stubbornized his heart, along with his servants. And the point is, I'm going to show them some signs. For what end? The next verse tells us, so that you may tell in the ears of your son and of your grandson, your son's son, what I have done, what I have wrought upon Egypt, and the signs which I have done among them, so that you may know, here we know, we see it, Ki Ani Yahuwah. And no, folks, you know, I don't care for the translation, but I think it's particularly important here to emphasize this. It's not that I am the Lord. That's not what he is telling them. He is telling them something a lot deeper. He is the one who keeps promises. By that name, he said to Moshe, that is the name I'm going to make clear to you all. And we ought to make it clear, too, when we read it. So that they may know, Ki Ani Yahuwah. So Moshe and Aaron went unto Pharaoh, and they did as they were told. They said, thus says Yahuwah, Elohim of the Hebrews, how long, for crying out loud, are you going to refuse to humble yourself before me? Let my people go that they may serve me. And furthermore, if you refuse to do that, to let my people go, behold, remember what the pattern was that was established before? Pharaoh kept saying, tomorrow, one more night with the frogs. Well, all right, so tomorrow, you're going to get it. Tomorrow I will bring locusts into your border. Later on, I guess millennia later, we'll see locusts going into other fake gods still. They'll cover the face of the earth. Now, this was a lot bigger plague, obviously, so that no one will be able to even see the earth. They'll eat everything which is left, which hasn't been eaten already by the previous plagues, and anything that remains unto you from the hail. They'll eat every tree which grows for you out of the field. Your houses will be filled with these things. Same thing for your servants, the houses of all the people of Mitzrayim, as neither your fathers nor your fathers' fathers have seen. You think you've seen locusts before? Uh-uh. Since that day that they were upon the earth up until now. So, they went out, left Pharaoh, and his servants then said to him the following. How long will this man remain a snare to us? Let these people go, for crying out loud. Come on, what's it going to take? That they may serve Yahuwah their El. Haven't you figured it out yet? That in fact, Egypt is destroyed? Literally, they're telling him, can't you see it? Egypt, it's too late. It is destroyed. Avdah. That, by the way, is the first use of that particular term in the Torah. I guess it's a pretty, well, dramatic first use. Now, at this point, Moshe and Aaron are again brought back into Pharaoh, and he says to them, oh, listen, he sounds like he's been listening, right? Go serve Yahuwah your El. But, wait, there's always a caveat. Who needs to go? Like he's trying to save face here. Well, says Moshe, we'll go with our old, with our young sons and our daughters, our flocks and our herds. We'll go. We need to hold a feast unto Yahuwah. Sounds like the ante has just been upped, right? He says to them, well, so be Yahuwah with you, and I will let the men. The word is not really translated here, but it seems to be kind of implied strongly, is only the men go. and your little ones, you can see that evil is before your face. See that? Check it out. Not so. Only those that are men. Go serve Yahuwah, because that's what you want. So they were driven out of Pharaoh's presence. Well, as you might figure, no dice. That's not what he was asking for, and that's not going to get it. So then Yahuwah says to Moshe, stretch out your hand. Notice it's your hand this time. Over the land of Mitzrayim for the locusts. So they can come up upon the land of Mitzrayim and they'll eat every herb of the land. Everything that the hail hasn't already taken out. So Moshe did as commanded. He stretched forth his rod. Now the hand has the rod in it over the land of Mitzrayim. And Yahuwah brought an east wind upon the land all day long and all night long. In the morning, here are the locusts. And they went up over everything. Over the borders, from one end to the other. Very grievous they were before them. There had never been locusts like this. Neither after them shall be such. So I guess we've seen other plagues of locusts, like what's happening in Mecca now, but no doubt about it, not on the same order as with this one. They covered the face of the whole earth. Land was literally darkened. They ate everything. I mean everything. Herbs of the land, fruit of the trees. Nothing green was left throughout all the land of Egypt. Now, their animals have already had a really tough time. The hail has taken a lot of stuff out. This pretty well cleans it up. So at this point, there's basically no food left in Mitzrayim. So at this point, Pharaoh calls for Moshe and Aaron, and it says, in haste, I have sinned against you, he says, and especially against Yahuwah, your Elohim. So therefore forgive, I pray you, my sin, just this one time, and entreat Yahuwah, your El, that he may take away from me this death. And so Moshe did. He went out from Pharaoh, entreated Yahuwah, and here comes an exceedingly strong west wind, opposite of the east wind, which took up the locusts, drove them out literally into the Red Sea, and there remained not a single locust in all of the borders of Mitzrayim. But it says Yahuwah then did what? Here the root word is kazakified. He hardened Pharaoh's heart, and Pharaoh, as a result, still didn't let the children of Israel go. So now Yahuwah speaks again to Moshe, and he is going to... Now we're up to plague number 9, right? The last of the three sets of three. He says the following, stretch out your hand towards the heaven, Hashemayim, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt. Darkness is so thick it might even be felt. Now here I pause, because there is a lot of discussion on this point. Somehow this one does seem to be different. And sometimes you will see the Midrash point out that, look, if you see the progression of the plagues and understand what's been going on, they seem to get worse and worse, right? You have the Nile turned into blood. Then you have other things that come upon the land, lice and so forth, and frogs. Nasty things, certainly they represent various deities, things that the Egyptians held up as gods. But eventually we have the separation. Not going to affect the people of Israel in the land of Goshen. And then they get worse and worse. And eventually we see hail that takes out the crops. We see first it's just the animals that are harmed. Then people have boils and so forth that is very, very unpleasant. But now we're getting really, really serious. The locusts and the plagues that lead up to that, the last few, literally have now taken all of Egypt's food away. But what is it with this plague of darkness? I mean, some would say, well, gee, that doesn't sound like all that big of a deal. There's speculation, was it another one of the dust storms that they're possibly used to? That would describe darkness which can be felt, especially though if it doesn't affect the people in the land of Goshen. Israel, it says, has light in their dwellings. Folks didn't see one another, though, for 3 full days. So what is it about this plague of darkness that is different? It's not... It doesn't follow the pattern of the kind of continuing progression. Nobody dies in the darkness. And the answer seems to be the following. Now, we've already talked about the fact that these plagues represent some kind of a sign, an oat, on the judges, the gods, those that are supposedly the protectors, right? The gods in whom Egypt trusted. Of course, one of the foremost among them, Ra, the sun god. There are those that point out among Egyptologists, if this pharaoh was in fact Ramses, not sure, well, that suffix means the son of, and so what's Ramses? The son of Ra, son of the sun god. Is it just possible there's a message here, right? Not a very highly coded message either. So here is another one of these examples of a sign that the Creator is giving. It doesn't have the same pain level as other ones have, but it certainly has kind of a whole different resonance to it, because now Egypt is saying, okay, number one god among the gods, Ra, the sun god. And here's the Creator of the universe and the real God saying, yep, you think this is a god? Uh-uh. Not so much. So, they didn't rise from their place for three full days. Pharaoh at this point calls unto Moshe, and he says, yeah, I get it. Go you, serve Yahuwah. Still got the caveat. Just let your flocks and your herds stay behind. Let your little ones, they can go with you. Well, says Moshe, we need to give into our hand sacrifices, burnt offerings, so that we can sacrifice to Yahuwah. Cattle needs to go with us. In other words, not going to leave a single hoof behind. Thereof we must take to serve Yahuwah our El. And we don't know what we're going to have to do until we get there. Well, nope. Yahuwah is still working on Pharaoh's heart. In this case, he has again kazakified it. Be strong, he says to Pharaoh's heart, and he ain't going to let him go. Well, he says, get away from me. Take heed to yourself. See my face no more. For in the day you see my face again, you shall die. Pharaoh is not happy. Well, says Moshe, you've spoken well. I will again see your face no more. Prophetically, it sounds like he's just signed his own death warrant. You won't see my face again. Next chapter, chapter 11, says, Moshe then spoke to Moshe, and he said, I got one more plague that I'm going to bring upon Pharaoh and upon Mitzrayim. Afterwards, he will indeed let you go. And not only will he let you go, he will literally shalak you. He will send you out of here. So, now here's a place where I sometimes will quote, as you know, Rashi. The word in the Hebrew is na that appears in there. Na can have a number of meanings. And Rashi suggests that because there is a single verb in here and not a second verb, that it literally has the meaning of please. So this is an interesting understanding. Because this is the Creator of the universe telling Moshe, essentially, please speak now in the ears of the people. The claim is that what he is making sure is when the time comes for folks to leave, they're probably going to be just thrilled to be gone, right? What is the point of what is now being asked? That seems to be the kind of understanding of please here. He is going to say, plunder Egypt. Let every one of the people ask every man of his neighbor, every woman of her neighbor, jewels of silver, jewels of gold. Why? Well, we know that later on it's going to be useful in the wilderness to build the tabernacle. And arguably, more importantly, and this is the thing that a lot of the Midrash will point out, this is the Creator of the universe one more time making clear that he is going to fulfill every aspect of the prophetic promises that he has already made. Even those that when the time comes, people might not be that, they may not care so much about. But he does. So hence kind of the understanding of please ask these people to do these things. That way all of the elements will be fulfilled. Well, it says, Yahuwah gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Moreover, this man Moshe was he was of high stature. He was great in the land of Egypt and in the sight of Pharaoh's servants. By this time, they had learned that when Moshe speaks a lot more than Merrill Lynch, people had better listen. So in the sight of the people, in sight of his servants, Moshe has a great deal of respect. So Moshe tells them, thus says Yahuwah, about midnight will I go out in the midst of Egypt, and all of the firstborn in the land shall die. From the firstborn of Pharaoh to literally the firstborn of the maidservant that's behind the mill, the firstborn of all the cattle. And there will be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt. Know this. There's never been anything like it, and there isn't going to be anything like it anymore either. But against all the children of Israel, not a dog will wet his tongue. Against man or beast. And this, again, is how you will know that Yahuwah is putting a difference. He is discerning, distinguishing, drawing a line of separation between the people of Mitzrayim and of his folks, Israel. All these servants will come down unto me, they'll bow down to me, and they'll say, get out, and all the people that follow after you, and after that I will go out. And he went out from Pharaoh, literally in hot anger. So he has told everybody, including Pharaoh, what's going to happen. Yahuwah then says to Moshe, Pharaoh's not going to listen to you, so that my wonders may be multiplied in the land of Egypt. Now, we've talked about signs. Here is wonders, miracles, that they will be multiplied in the land of Egypt. Well, and it says, Moshe and Aaron did all of these wonders before Pharaoh, and Yahuwah, again, hardened, he kazakified, he strengthened Pharaoh's heart. He didn't let the children of Israel go out of his land. We're now setting up and ready for the 10th plague. Wait a minute. Well, what's chapter 12 doing in here then, right? Interesting digression, isn't it? The stage has been set, and now we have, it's not really a digression. It fits in the story. It's necessary because the people of Israel need to do something to prepare for this. And it's also interesting because prior to this, we've talked about normally there being this distinction that the Creator makes. He's already said he's going to make this distinction. What is the need for one more sign? Right. Have we ever thought about that? It's kind of interesting. All these people up there in the land of Goshen, he hasn't needed a specific sign over the doorpost before. But it does look like something is bigger that's going on here. Yet another sign, if you will. A sign that is going to be important, dramatically important, in the times to come. And it starts with Yahuwah reminding Moshe and Aaron. Well, I said reminding. I guess it's not really. He's speaking to them. And he says, this month will be unto you the beginning of months. First month of the year to you. As if something really important that is going to be a remembrance is being laid out here. Speak unto all the children of Israel, all the congregation, he says, Kol Edah, as a matter of fact. In the 10th day of this month, they will take every one of them, every man, a lamb, according to their father's houses, a lamb per household. And if the household is too small for their own lamb, then you can share with your neighbor next to the house. Take one according to the number of souls. In other words, how much is going to be needed to feed everybody. According to every man's eating, you shall make your count for the lamb. The lamb has some specific characteristics. It is to be a male of the first year. Take it from either the sheep or from the goats. We usually think of a lamb as having to be a sheep, but nope. A little male lamb of the goats is fine too. You shall keep it, for 4 days. From the 10th day up until now the 14th day of the month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at dusk. Then they take the blood, they put it on the two side posts of the lintel, and of the houses, wherein they're fixing to eat it. They will eat the flesh in that very night, roasted with fire, and with unleavened bread. With bitter herbs they shall eat it. Don't eat it raw, nor sodden with water, but roasted with fire, its head with its legs, and with the innard parts thereof. And let nothing of it remain until morning. That which remains until the morning, you need to burn with fire. Here is the way you need to do this. Here's how you will eat it. With your loins girded, your sandals on your feet, your staff in your hand, and you eat it in haste. It is the Pesach Le Yahuwah, the Passover of Yahuwah. Now, he's going to tell them a bit more about it, and we'll get back to that in just a second. But, of course, this is the first reference that we're going to see to a feast, a celebration, one of the most important of the appointed times of Yahuwah, literally laced with prophetic significance, as we now know in hindsight. But I'm going to point out as we go through here several other things about this. Again, it seems like a digression. It also seems, given that he has made this distinction in the past without such an oath, that there's more to this particular sign. Indeed, there is, because we're told to remember it forever throughout our generations. And yeah, that's in spite of whether the whole church tells you you don't need to worry about it anymore or not. And that is one of those comments that I make deliberately, because I think this is so important, something that we need to, as we read it and as we think about it, remind ourselves why it is that it was so important that, we have been lied to about this. Most of us that came out of the sun god day, Romanized, paganized church. We've missed the key parts here. Okay, so it's described, this first one, here's how it's going to work, right? It's a male of the first year, either a lamb or a goat. There's a description for what's to be done with it. The blood to be put on the two side posts of the house upon the lintel, and you eat it with your loins girded, sandals on your feet, staff in your hand, in haste. It is the Pesach Le'Yahuwah. Why? For I will go through the land of Mitzrayim in that night. I will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both of man and of beast. And against, now here we go, against all of the so-called gods of Egypt, I will execute judgments. Ani Yahuwah. This is the kind of the crowning summary of the whole thing. All of the gods of Egypt, not one of them, is going to stand up to what is fixing to happen. And the blood will be to you a token upon the houses where you are. When I see that blood, I'll pass over you. No plague upon you will destroy you or the firstborn of your house, when in fact I smite the rest of the land of Mitzrayim. And on this day, he says, it'll be unto you for a memorial. Listen carefully. You shall keep it as a feast to Yahuwah. A hag to Yahuwah. Throughout your generations, you Jesus fulfills it. Don't do it anymore. Nope. He says, throughout your generations, you shall keep it as a feast, a hag, by an ordinance, what, forever. Ha'olam, forever. Now, as I go through this, I'm going to also point out one other thing. This must be important. He must really mean it when he says it, gee, do you think? Because he repeats this part about keeping it throughout your generations, in all your houses, forever, three separate times, in not even a dozen verses. Well, maybe 16 verses. Certainly in this Torah portion. Something really important is going on here. 7 days you're to eat unleavened bread. First day, you put away the leaven out of your houses. Anyone that eats leavened bread from that first day into the seventh day, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. On the first day, there's going to be a holy convocation, a set-apart time. And on the seventh day, same thing, another holy convocation. No manner of work is to be done in them, except for, this is what's been sometimes called a cooking feast. You are allowed to cook, save that which every man must eat. That's the only thing that is to be done by you on this first and last day. And you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. For in this selfsame day I have brought you by your hosts out of the land of Mitzrayim. Therefore, you shall observe this day, here comes the second one, throughout your generations by an ordinance olam, forever. It's literally a huchat olam. Remember, huk is one of those statutes. Do it because I said so. You don't have to understand why. And indeed, throughout most of history, people didn't understand why. And I'm going to suggest that there are still a lot of folks who don't understand why he says do it forever. First month, on the 14th day of the month at evening, you eat unleavened bread up until the 21st day of the month at evening. 7 days, there's to be no leaven found in your houses. For whosoever eats that which is leavened, that soul shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a sojourner or one that's born in the land. Now here I pause again. I cannot help but think, folks, how many times as each of us were growing up were we told all kinds of lies. The law is done away with, nailed to the cross. We don't do all that old biblical stuff anymore. Those are Jewish feasts. That's got to be probably one of the third on the list right after "You Can Be Like God, You Will Not Die" of the biggest whoppers in all of Scripture. The law is done away with. Don't do this. Over and over again here he says, not only do it throughout your generations as an ordinance, whether you understand why or not, forever. What else does he say? He gives this warning. If in fact you don't keep this unleavened bread admonition, you'll be cut off from the congregation of Israel. Does that explain, for example, why it is that a Romanized, paganized whore church is powerless anymore? And I mean powerless in terms of real understanding of the Scriptures anymore? I can't help but think, I hear this, I heard it no less than several times this week. Various preachers, Sun God Day preachers and others saying, oh, you know, the church just doesn't have the power, doesn't have the Holy Ghost in it anymore. Well, folks, if you have been cut off for rebellion against things that you were supposed to be doing and teaching your children's children's children forever, maybe that's a partial explanation. Maybe there's a sign there, a sign that we were supposed to have paid attention to that the whore church has ignored. It says it again. You shall eat nothing leavened. In all your habitations, you shall eat unleavened bread. That word, of course, chametz, nothing that has leavening in it, chametz. Then Moshe called for all the elders of Israel, said to them, draw out, take your lamps, according to your families, kill the Pesach lamb. Take a bunch of hyssop, and dip it in the blood in the basin, strike the lintel and the two side posts with the blood that's in the basin, and none of you, you stay in the house. Do not go out until morning, because Yahuwah is going to pass and smite the Egyptians, and when he sees that blood upon the lintel and on the side posts, he will pass over that door and will not suffer, will not allow the destroyer to come into your houses to smite you. Stay in the house, stay, if you will, under the covering, yes, of the blood. Does seem a little bit metaphorical, doesn't it? If you're not doing what he says to be doing, if we're not honoring his Pesach, if we're not keeping it as an ordinance forever, if we're not in fact doing the things that he says, have we metaphorically come out from under the blood? Well, I leave that to the head of the house to understand, but I think the meaning of Scripture here is pretty clear, pretty undeniable, and yeah, it's even repeated. Oh, wait, as if we missed it, verse 24 says it one more time, third time. And you shall observe this thing for an ordinance, a chuk, forever, to you and to your sons. Ha'olam. Any questions, right? It'll come to pass when you come into the land which Yahuwah will give you, according as he's promised, you will keep this service. And it'll come to pass when your children ask you, what does this mean? They ask the question. Well, here's what you're to say. It is the sacrifice of the Passover of Yahuwah, that he passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt. He smote the Egyptians and delivered our houses. And the people, it says, bowed their heads and they worshipped. So, the children of Israel did exactly as commanded. Wouldn't it be neat if that was still true? Children of Israel simply did as commanded. And as Yahuwah commanded Moshe and Aaron, so did they. Came to pass that at midnight, Yahuwah smote all of the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive hanging out down in the dungeon, as well as the firstborn of all the cattle. And here's another one of those interesting little observations. It says, Pharaoh rose up in the night. The commentaries say, yeah, got out of his bed. Why? What is the point, right? Why is that matter? He rose up in the night, he and all of his servants, all the Egyptians. Because he was asleep. If he was in his bed, presumably he was asleep, but something happened to wake him up. There was a great cry in Egypt, not a single house where there wasn't one dead. The implication here, the plain text of the verse and this understanding of Pharaoh getting up, you can almost picture it, right? And by the way, if you've seen the movie, Yul Brynner gets out of bed in a panic. There is panic in the land of Egypt at this time. He called for Moshe and Aaron. He said, get up. Get out from among my people. Remember what they were promised? He's going to send you out. He will shlock y'all. Get out from among my people. You and the children of Israel, go. Go serve Yahuwah as you've said. Take your flocks. Take your herds, just like you said, and get be gone. And bless me also. And the Egyptians were urgent upon the people to send them out of the land in haste, to shlock them. For they said, we are all as good as dead. Yeah, we are dead men walking, is how we would say it nowadays. We are all dead men. People took their dough before it was leavened. There's the symbolic understanding. Didn't have time for it to rise. Their kneading troughs were bound up and their clothes upon their shoulders. And the children of Israel did, according to the word of Moshe. They asked of the Egyptians jewels, silver, jewels of gold, raiment, clothing, and Yahuwah gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Yeah, you got it. Take it. So that they let them have what they asked, and they literally despoiled the Egyptians. And the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Sukkot. 600,000, approximately, men on foot, along with children, it says here. And, of course, there would have been women in there, too. The total numbers have been estimated for a long, long time. But, essentially, this is talking about, and we're going to see the numbers in the next book, but 600,000 or so men of fighting age, along with children and with women. Total numbers probably three times that, or maybe more. So 2.5 or 3 million people. Is generally kind of understood. I usually think of this as being about 3 million people. This is a city leaving the land. And also it says a mixed multitude went up with them, with flocks and herds, even very much cattle. In other words, there were people who were not, at this point, descendants of literal the sons of Israel. This is the mixed multitude. This includes people, famously, like Caleb, the dog, not a descendant of the tribes of Israel, but those who have chosen and will, in fact, have the opportunity to be grafted in. They baked unleavened cakes out of the dough that they brought forth out of land. It wasn't leavened because they were thrust out. They were shellacked in a hurry. They couldn't tarry, nor had they prepared for themselves various victuals. Now, it tells us that the time that the children of Israel dwelt in Mitzrayim was 430 years. And in general, the understanding here is this is probably a longer time frame than we might have originally considered. Seems to count the total time of the sojourning from Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov down to the present, and would include the time that they had not only dwelt in Mitzrayim, the land specifically. Remember, the patriarchs were in and out of Egypt a few times too, but also the land of Canaan. And it came to pass at the end of that 430 years, even the very same selfsame day, it came to pass that all of the host of Yahuwah went out from the land of Egypt. It was a night of watching unto Yahuwah for bringing them out from the land of Egypt. This same night, it says today. Now, this is one of those things that's interesting. There are, of course, traditions about people staying up all night and doing this. And I got to admit, when I read this, I can't help but think, there's probably some merit in that. This same night, it says, is a night of watching unto Yahuwah for all the children of Israel throughout their generations. Now, unlike what we've seen before, I don't necessarily read this as a commandment, because he's made it clear. There are certain things we're supposed to do throughout your generations and all your dwelling places, and it's outlined them. But this does say it's a night of watching. So even if there's not a commandment in there, I think there is no doubt something that we need to be able to kind of pay attention and think about. What does it mean, right? How is it that we are to understand this as a night of watching? Yahuwah then says to Moshe and to Aaron, this is the ordinance of the Pesach. No alien is to eat of this, but every man's servant, those that he has bought for money, once he has been circumcised, well, then he can eat of it and shall eat of it. A sojourner, a hired servant, shall not eat thereof. One house it's to be eaten. You carry forth outside the flesh out of the house. Don't break a bone of it. And all of the congregation, Kol Edat Israel, shall keep it. If you have a stranger who is sojourning with you, and he would like to keep the Passover to Yahuwah, well, then let his males be circumcised. Let him come near and keep it. He shall be, here's the mixed multitude reference again, he shall be like one that's born in the land. But no uncircumcised person shall eat thereof. Now, there is a whole lot, right, that you can think about and talk about. And probably some of these things we will. Certainly we'll talk about them as we get closer and closer to the time when we do this. But the thing I want to emphasize that I think is just so important here is that this is something that we have been lied to about. Yes, there is incredible amount of symbolism, the signs. This whole portion is full of signs for those with eyes to see. And it's absolutely key that, no, it hasn't been done away with. Not one yod nor tittle of the Torah, we're told by the Mashiach, is going to be done away with. As long as heaven and earth still exist, you got to figure he's talking about this too. And then this is interesting. It follows up towards the end of chapter 12 with this commentary. That's not a commentary. It's a commandment. See if this applies anymore. One Torah. Torah achat. One instruction. One law is how King James translates it. Fine. But it is a unity. For him that is homeborn and unto the stranger that sojourns among you. We're to have one instruction, one law. And guess what, folks? It hasn't changed. Thus did all of the children of Israel as Yahuwah commanded Moshe and Aaron, so they did. Came to pass that selfsame day that Yahuwah brought the children out of the land of Egypt by their hosts. Now, chapter 13, we're going to get a slightly different take on an element of this. It does seem to have a lot to do with this final, if you will, 10th plague. But clearly, the 10th plague has been set apart from the rest of them. There is a lot of emphasis, and I find it to be really interesting emphasis. Probably talk about some of this in a little bit more detail elsewhen as well. But notice that not only have we seen judgments against the gods here, this one is a different death of the firstborn thing is different in another sense. Yes, this is the first time when we have seen human beings that failed. Well, with the exception, right, of those that didn't come in out of the hailstorm. But all of Egypt, in this case, firstborn, dead. There's no doubt about it. The connection is made clear in the first chapter of the Exodus. And it's repeated when Exodus 4. You shall say to Pharaoh, here's what Yahuwah says, Israel's my son, my firstborn. I've told you to let my people go, my son go, so that he may worship me. If you refuse to let him go, I'm going to kill your firstborn son too. Remember that? Exodus 4, verses 22 and 23. The sages will talk about measure for measure and the understanding clearly that this is a righteous judgment based on the fact that Pharaoh commanded what was at that point, right, one of the gods, their god of life, the Nile River. Not to mention that, but the midwives as well that are also associated with bringing new life into the world turned them into agents of death. The river turned to blood, and now we're seeing the final element of that judgment. What is done will be done, right? Whosoever sheds man's blood from the Noahide covenant, his blood will be shed. I like this summary. I'll come back to it again probably tomorrow. When Moshe is told to tell Pharaoh, my son, my firstborn Israel, he's making a really clear, again, a sign, an understanding. I, Ani Yahuwah, who cares for his children, not the one who kills his children. You get it, Pharaoh? And it was preceded by an act showing that there's not only physical darkness, but there's also such a thing as a moral darkness. And when you look at it that way, all of the pieces here really begin to fall into place. And I think that's so much of the reason, the understanding why it's reminding us again. There's one instruction for you, the homeborn, and for the stranger that sojourns amongst you, for those that would be grafted in. And we would be advised, I guess, to remember that. All right, chapter 13 helps to make some other elements of this clear. Yahuwah then tells Moshe, he said the following, "Sanctify, set apart to me all of the firstborn. Anything or anyone that opens the womb among the children of Israel, both of man and the beast, it's mine." And then Moshe told everybody, remember this day, when the day you came out from Mitzrayim, out of the house of bondage, it was by the strength of hand of Yahuwah he brought you out. No leavened bread is to be eaten. This day you go forth in the month of Aviv. And it shall be that when Yahuwah brings you then into the land that he's promised, the land of the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Amorite, the Hivite, the Jebusite, that he swore unto your fathers to give you, that land flowing with milk and honey, you shall keep this service in this month. Again, 7 days you eat unleavened bread. 7th day is a feast to Yahuwah. Unleavened bread throughout your dwelling places for those 7 days, nor is there to be any leaven seen with you in all your borders. And you tell your son in that day. Why? It is because of this which Yahuwah did for me when I came forth out of Egypt for this purpose. In other words, this too shall be a sign, le'ot, unto you upon your hand, a memorial between your eyes, that the Torah of Yahuwah may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand he brought you out of Mitzrayim. So therefore, what? Shamar, keep and do in its season this ordinance from year to year. Ha'olam. And it shall be that when Yahuwah brings you into the land of the Canaanite, as you swore to your fathers, and gives it to you, you're to set apart all to him that open the womb. All of the firstborn. Every firstling that's a male that comes out of a beast, it belongs to Yahuwah. If it's an ass, you redeem it with a lamb. If you won't redeem it, then you break its neck. And the firstborn among all my sons of men you shall redeem. And it'll be that when your son comes to you and asks you in the time ahead, saying, what is this? You tell him, by strength of hand, Yahuwah brought us up out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. And it came to pass, when Pharaoh wouldn't let us go, Yahuwah slew all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, of man and of beast. So therefore, we set apart to him all that open the womb that are males. Firstborn my sons, of course, I redeem. So there's a sacrifice of the animals. The firstborn of sons are redeemed. And this is to be an oat, a sign upon your hand, and for frontlets between your eyes, for by strength of hand, Yahuwah brought us forth out of Mitzrayim. I guess it's something we are well advised to understand, to study, and to remember. And I guess to hearken back to how I began this whole thing, there are those that seem to have forgotten. And the creator of the universe really does have not only a sense of humor, he has a sense of understanding of these signs. They're important. And one way or the other, he does and he will remind us. And may it be so.